Welcome to It's All About the Story, Grief Stories That Connect Us. This podcast takes you into the lives of people who have gone through loss and have come out the other side to experience joy again. Each story is someone's lived experience and reveals how wrestling with grief can turn loss into wisdom. You might even find some of these insights helpful in your own grief journey. Come, meet the people like yourself who have experienced loss and who now openly share their story with us. And now, here is your host, Rick Berg.
Well, welcome everybody to It's All About the Story, Grief Stories That Connect Us. It is good to be together once again. When Mike Bernhardt's wife died, he turned to writing poetry as a tool of healing. He later solicited the poetry of others who loved ones had died, receiving hundreds of submissions from around the world. The result was Voices of Grieving, first published in 1994, and then published again in 2021. Very happy to have Mike join us on It's All About the Story. Welcome, Mike.
Nice to be here. Thanks, Rick.
Well, Mike, I want to get into your story because this is a personal storytelling podcast, and we always want to know a little bit about the background of the individuals besides the knowledge and the wisdom that they might have in the area of grief and loss for our listeners. So could you talk a little bit about your wife, Susan, her death, your first wife? It was during this grief journey that, well, you returned to poetry. So can you take us back a little bit?
Yeah. So we had met in 1983. So my Susan, my first wife, died 32 years ago. So it's been a long time. And yet it's still very much with me in certain ways, not in a painful way, but, you know, my life changed in so many ways because of it. Anyway, she had a congenital heart problem, and she told me all about it the first time we met, so it was no surprise. But after we were married 7.5 years, we'd known each other about 8.5, and she started to have some problems, and she died rather suddenly, kind of overnight. So it was shocking and traumatic, and I started writing poetry. I felt driven to write poetry, and it was something that I had done as a teenager. Mm-hmm. And in college, I had a very angst-ridden youth, and that was something that I did. But I hadn't written since then. And when she died, it was something I could do to really express the pain and put it out in a way that I could look at it and feel that I was seen. I was also going to a support group for about a year. We met weekly, and that was incredibly valuable. And I was seeing a therapist as well. And but poetry was something that I did for me. Mm-hmm. And it made a huge difference. And as with practice, I got better at it. We were just talking off the show that there was a point where I was at a restaurant and I just had a feeling come, and I sat down with a piece of paper and I just wrote it out, and it was images. And I can read that poem later, but it was, it just became a medium for me to express myself without having to explain myself.
You know, it's interesting because, I mean, you know, being a narrative therapist and working with grievers, people often talk about, you know, how do I express myself? Who do I express myself to? You know, and there's this, it seems to be this kind of struggle of this internal struggle of wanting to share it openly with others, but also this very personal journey that you want to kind of keep to yourself a little bit. It's you know, this kind of reaction, and it seems like poetry, would that lead to kind of, because I mean, you weren't planning to share these with anybody. This was for your own health and welfare, so to speak.
Initially, it was for me, yeah. And I mean, certainly, you know, I facilitate most weeks a grief support group for people whose spouses died under the age of 50, because I think there are issues. You know, if you're older, you are looking back at the life that you had and missing the companionship you've had mm-hmm. for decades, possibly. When you're younger, there's a lot of grief for the dreams that have been lost, the things, the children you hope to have, the growing old you hoped you would have with that person. So the issues are different, and since my loss was under 50, that's what I like to do. Grief. The one thing, I mean, it was my experience, and certainly the experience of people in my group, is grief is incredibly isolating, right. And we really want to be around other people who know what that's like, and it's very hard to just talk to other people about it. Partly because we don't think they'll understand, and partly because often they won't. Right. And, you know, there's a lot of truth to that. Grief and death aren't something that are very openly spoken of in our society. Mm-hmm. So we need to be around other people who get it, who know how just devastating it is.
Yeah. So could you share maybe from your, you know, as you started entering into this poetic life again during your journey, could you share, you know, maybe a poem or two from that time period with us?
Yeah. One thing I can read is a poem that I wrote sometime after she died. And it was just missing her. And it's called Secret Message. And it was really kind of noticing the way I had taken on gestures of hers, phrases, things, you know, little things that she liked to say. I found that I was saying them. And when I said that, when I realized that, I realized that she was in me in some way, but it didn't feel good. It made me miss her more. So I hear you in my voice now that yours is stilled forever. I hear you in my voice, an inflection or choice of words, shrugging my shoulders in that certain way. Now a secret message between us. It's all I have left of you.
Wow. Now, as a listener to that poem, may I respond?
Sure.
As I was hearing that poem, I lost my first wife when she was 44. Hmm. And when you're reading that poem, I could hear Pam's voice even now speaking into my life, you know, and kind of cheering me on, actually, as I even do this podcast, you know, because when she was dying, we had some time, you know, to talk a little bit about our future. And I remember saying to her one night, I'm really going to miss talking to you and hearing your voice.
Yeah.
And so when you spoke that poem, it just brought me back, you know, to hearing Pam's voice again and what she would say to me even right now, you know, like this secret message. You know, it's only between the two of us. No one can share that except the two of us. So, yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, some people say, let's say regarding this book, you know, why would you want to read all of these poems by people whose loved ones died? Wouldn't it make you feel worse? Mm-hmm. And I think, I imagine that you'll agree with me that no, it actually makes you feel better because it helps reading these, you know, there's 80 people in here. It's not just my poems. There's 7 of the poems are mine, but there's 150 poems here. And, you know, when you read poems by other people, it somehow the right kind of poems that like that, it just, it connects you. Mm-hmm. you know, in a way, it connects you to your loved one. And so there's kind of a healing quality for me, at least. And, you know, as I said, it's been 32 years for me, but still, when I read some of the poems in this book, you know, I feel the loss again, but not in a painful way. It's in a, there's kind of a healing quality to kind of feeling again, maybe, you know. And earlier on in my grief, I mean, I wanted to feel the pain. I didn't want to forget it because it felt like forgetting the pain meant forgetting Susan. And I think one of the reasons I wanted these poems initially. So what happened was I had been writing, and at a certain point, I think I'd had a conversation with my therapist, maybe, and she'd said, you know, maybe you should try to find other people's poems. And so I did. I looked, but there was nothing published out there that was like that. There were a lot of poems by classical writers, and there's certainly plenty of poems out there about grief, and I see them quoted online all the time. But I think because of the style of sometimes very accomplished poets really want to make their poems, I won't say clever, but in terms of high quality writing, for me, sometimes the directness that I needed was lost. I just wanted to read something that let me know that you felt like I did, if you were the writer.
It's kind of the unedited version, you know, like it's just the rawness of it. It's kind
of, exactly. Give me what it was when you were really feeling it, you know, not what you did to make it beautiful. And so some of the poems in here really are beautiful, but but they didn't lose that quality that I was after. And so I didn't find anything published. And so I started looking for other people's poems. I put out, this was in 1992, three. I put out calls for submissions through advertisements in various newspapers, like the Unitarian Church had a national newsletter, Compassionate Friends had a newsletter, the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Center had a newsletter as well. And so I put an ad in there just asking for submissions and saying that the quality of the writing wasn't important as how well it said what the writer was intending to say, how well they communicated what they were feeling. And I received about 200 submissions back then by letter, because email wasn't a thing yet for most people. And I often received letters with those poems. And some people would tell me their stories. And, you know, there was something about, I was just so amazed that people trusted me with poems that they often said they had never shared with anyone before. Or my therapist thought, you know, I've been writing these poems with my therapist, and they thought that this would be a good place to send them. Or, you know, I hope perhaps that, you know, in sharing this in your book, that, you know, maybe my poem can help someone else. And so So for the writers to share the poems was as healing as reading them is for readers. You know, and what's for me.
Yeah, so. When I was reading through some of the poems from your book, I mean, again, I don't know why a person is drawn to certain poems. I don't know why that is, you know. Yeah, but one of the poems that really spoke to me, and I think maybe I was trying to figure out why, but the one called "Until the Milk Stops."
Oh yeah.
And maybe it's because I'm a grandpa now, you know.
Yeah.
And I have these precious little people in my life, and I can't imagine what would happen if one of them died. And not only for me, but for the mothers, you know. And so that one really, I don't know, it really touched me deeply, the words that the poet had spoken to her. And can you tell me a little bit about the background of that poem and maybe read that for us?
Yeah. So Lorene Jackson, who's the author of the poem, lost her daughter, Anna, when Anna was about 7 months old. And so I actually knew her a little bit before Susan died, because Susan led a support group because she had this very serious congenital heart problem. She hadn't been expected to live past infancy, but she lived till she was 31. And so she started a support group at some point for mothers who had young children who had very serious congenital heart problems, because she was such an inspiration to all of these mothers. She gave them hope that maybe their child could grow up too, but Anna didn't. And so the poem was really, she was still nursing Anna. And so the poem was really about, I think sometimes the most powerful poems are about an experience that in some ways is, I won't say ordinary, but it's not talking about the feelings, but it's talking about, well, I'll just read it and you'll see. Let's see here. Day one, engorged breasts waiting to feed. Their last fare was mid-morning and routine. It is evening. Two feedings have been missed. A few hours earlier, the lifeless child was pressed against these breasts, but they could not understand. There is no pill to stop the flow, not now. Relief comes only by expressing the milk. After a few days, it will stop. The cold plastic pump sucks the milk painfully. There is no letdown. The breasts fight to release their nurture. The milk is collected in sterile bags, frozen out of habit. And for what? After months of saving every drop for the frail child, it is impossible to pour it down the drain. Day three. These breasts ridicule me. Theirs was the only milk she would take, yet it would not sustain her. This ritual, a morbid reminder, I could never do enough. Day four. There is no more to express. The breasts are limp and dried up, the emptiness complete.
Oof. That is a powerful poem, and it's, I'm not a woman.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've never experienced that in my life, but I was drawn into that poem, you know, the missing, you know, the guilt, all those emotions that come in a grief experience were captured so well in that, in a few short words.
Yeah. I know. It's just, it's really powerful. And you can hear when I'm reading it too. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've read this poem, you know, over 32 years. Cause, you know, as you mentioned in the intro, I republished this book in 2021. This was in the first book. And, yeah, I still am moved deeply sometimes when I read these poems, and, it's just the way it is. It has not, reading them, I never know how, what my own emotional response is going to be even now. And yeah, it's powerful.
The other poem I was looking at here and reading, again, a simple message, but I think something that I probably said over and over again, the way it wasn't, the poem, the way it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about the history of that poem or the background and read that for us.
Yeah. So she, actually, I've forgotten the author's name at the moment. Give me just a second here.
No worries.
Yeah, Shannon Pace. So this was about her grandmother. And we actually worked on the poem a little bit together. She had most of it done. It was really just the last stanza that she kind of added at my suggestion. And she was just very, very close to her grandmother. And the grandmother died during the pandemic. she was in a, I don't know if she was in a, I think she was in a nursing home or some kind of a facility when she died. And so she had always hoped that she could be there. And she'd been, you know, to take care of her grandmother in those last moments and be there for her. But she couldn't. And her grandmother died in the middle of the night. And she just got a call the next day that, you know, she's gone and she hadn't been able to see her. So that was very hard for her. So the poem, yeah, it's called The Way It Wasn't. I would have sat forever at your feet and listened to the stories you love to tell, like the one about five-year-old me counting coins on the liquor store floor to see if I could afford a pack of gum for my mother. It's the way you saw my heart I might miss the most. I always pictured us together at the end, crossing the sacred bridge space between breath and no breath, granddaughter caring for grandmother now, anointing your feet with lavender oil, in awe that they carried you all 94 years, separating your soft white hair into braids, adorning your neck with the pearls you always wanted, singing your three favorite hymns, serenading you into the next world the way you once sang your babies to sleep. I would have held your hands until they went cold. Instead, I woke to a voicemail that you had passed that night during the thunderstorm.
Yeah. You know, so many stories like this during COVID, you know, end of life, missing out on end of life conversations, like, you know, the poet has said there, and the grief and the loss. And I know you mentioned in a pre-interview that your wife, Yvonne, was encouraging you to revisit your book and find new stories because of all the loss that we experienced. And that was one of those stories, wasn't it, that came out of after you decided to maybe publish a second book?
Yes, this was a newer one. And yeah, what happened was when during the height of COVID, it was probably the fall of 2020. And as you know, of course, so many people were dying and there was so much grief out there. I'd read an article in the paper by someone who was, they had done a little research and estimated that for every person who died, there were seven people left grieving them. So, you know, she called it, it was its own pandemic of grief. And we realized, you know, that book had helped people when I'd first put it out. We should really do it again. And I had forgotten all of it. I hadn't forgotten the book, of course, but I had moved on with my life. And I thought previously about maybe republishing it. But I never did anything with it. I had met and married Yvonne. We had a child. I started a new career. There was, you know, life moved on for me after years. And we just decided we need to do it. So I was going to just try to find a few poems about death during the time of COVID, not necessarily from COVID, and add them to the book just to kind of update it a little bit and republish it. And I have a friend, and actually in the back of the book, I've got some information about his nonprofit called the Institute for Poetic Medicine. His name is John Fox, and I contacted him because I knew that he worked a lot with writers and poets to help, and it, not just around grief. It's, he works with people in prisons, and he uses poetry as a tool. Wow. To help people to move through the struggles they're having and grow. And so I told him about the project, and I'm actually donating a lot of the profits from this book to his nonprofit. As I cover my costs, I have more to give him. He sent out basically the exact same submission request that I'd done 30 years before to his mailing list of about 3,000 people who often worked with poetry and people who were clients or whatever. And I got another couple of hundred responses. And I was looking specifically for poems that related to death during COVID, but a lot of the poems that came had nothing to do with COVID. And so the book doubled in size. And I have a whole chapter now, though, of 17 poems that related to COVID in particular.
That's fascinating. So, you know, one of the things that I thought was really fascinating in talking to you earlier was you not only found new submissions, but you returned to some of the old poets.
Yes.
And I thought, how did that idea come about? Like, what gave you the inspiration to return, you know, 30 years later to these poets?
Yeah, I mean, part of it was because I was republishing the book, I wanted to let them know that. But what happened was I had read David Kessler, who some of your listeners or many might know, I don't know, wrote a book called, he worked a lot with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross while she was still around. And he wrote a book called Finding Meaning, The Sixth Stage of Grief. And based on reading his book, I had thought a lot about how I've grown over the decades since Susan died. And I wondered how it was for the other writers in my book in the first edition. And so I did a lot of work to find them. I found out of the 45 people in the first edition, I found about 30 of them. And so I came up with some questions to ask about how they had changed because of their grief. What had they learned? What did they wish they knew when they were in the middle of their loss that they know now? Things like that. What have they done to, what, if anything, have they done to kind of create meaning from that loss? And, you know, the reality is that there's no meaning in the death. And I mean, if you're somebody who is really struggling with a recent loss, I think it's a fallacy to think that somehow the death will become meaningful, mm-hmm. but your grief can become meaningful. Right. You know, the growth that you experience because of the death that you've had to go through will become meaningful in time. But what does meaning mean? I mean, some people will start a foundation, you know, like Mothers Against Drunk Driving or whatever. But for some people, the meaning is in having more compassion for other people who are in pain, to maybe be able to smile at someone who's hurting more easily than, you know, maybe not turn away from someone else in pain the way we might have before, because we know what it's been like to be hurting that much. And so, you know, to be there for someone else whose loved one has died. I mean, those are all ways of having meaning in our own life to, you know, do something good because of what we've suffered. So,
yeah, I think
they sent me back answers to their questions, and I edited their answers into short essays and then sent those back to them to make sure that I was still reflecting what they wanted to say. And so the essays here are really edited versions of what they told me that they were happy to put out.
So was the poem that I was looking at, Elephant.
Uh-huh.
Did that come during, is that by somebody who had written a poem previously and then was reflecting 3 years later?
Well, that particular one, that was sort of a cheat. So I met this woman because of the submission request that we put out in 2021.
Okay.
But she had a daughter who had died from SIDS a long time ago.
Okay.
I forgot how old the daughter was, just a few months, maybe 3 months or something. And her loss was long enough and her perspective was long enough because of that, that even though she wasn't actually one of the people I'd reconnected with, mm-hmm. I felt it was appropriate to put in here. In that section of,
yes.
So the section is called, of this book is called Time Passes. And that's where I put those essays. And it really was, kind of, as you said, looking back at old losses and how people have changed and grown as a result of a loss so long ago. So I can read that poem, Elephant, because it's just, I think, so beautiful. Mm-hmm. You're still in the room. The room's just larger. Years spent ignoring you, or else dragging out your secret life the way a magician flourishes bouquets from milk jugs. Ta-da! Now seen, then not. Enormous, invisible reason for so much. And time moves on, events engulf a life. One undersized elephant gets pushed aside. Soon enough to trot you into view, remove the camouflage seems a petty, distracting trick, or at least too sad to mention. Most people prefer a laugh than to rehearse old sorrows. But you've remained, blended effortlessly in with houses and plans, constant reminder that life is too short for injustice and squandered dreams. You've always been here, in a room that's grown to dwarf you, my elephant, my mentor, my muse. It's me who has changed.
Wonderful.
And what I could do, if you like, is read the essay that goes with that poem.
Sure.
And the woman's name is Rose Drew. It's fairly short. Before my daughter came and went, I was one of the top salespeople at a very large department store chain. I sold kitchen appliances like fridges and stoves and laundry appliances. I worked hard, played pool, got drunk at the weekends. I was able to communicate with anyone who needed big, expensive machines for the kitchen or laundry room. And I treated all customers fairly. I joked around with my coworkers. After Sarah died, I became more serious, more aware of the world. I left the sales job after the birth of my second daughter and a back injury. Now I'm a special needs tutor, a science supply teacher, a forensic anthropologist, a performance poet, and a book publisher. I earned a master's at Yale. I moved to England for a doctorate. But many things are the same. I still sell school to doubtful kids and books to readers. I treat people fairly. I joke with students, colleagues, and other poets. I am a teacher, a political activist, an anti-racist, someone who cannot see a wrong being done and stay silent. I'm no longer able to sit and watch politicians do what they like. The world can be a better place. It is up to us. I learned that life is unfair. It is short. And just because we want something to happen very much, it does not always work out as we want to. I'm sure I would have realized this by now. At age 29, I felt immortal. What could go wrong? Now I want to make every day count. I'm filled with horror when someone's life is cut short for terrible reasons, such as a Syrian toddler drowned on a beach who had died on the way to a safer life. We all deserve a safe place to live, food to eat, clean air to breathe, fresh water to drink, the chance to work and play within a community. Because really, what else is there?
Yeah, wow. Eh? What a life transformed. And you know, looking through the grief lens and the journey, and like you said, how it becomes, I just see this so often. When people dig into it, right? When they dig into the grief experience and don't make sense of it, because you can't, but begin to massage it or wrestle with it or wonder what it brings to you, you know, that might be important maybe for you and perhaps for somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, it wasn't that I wallowed in my grief, although maybe sometimes I did, but I immersed myself in it. It's kind of like, for me, grief was kind of a ship, you know, lost at sea. And I couldn't get off of it. So all I could do was just trust that, you know, it was going to take me somewhere safe in the end, even though I had no idea where I was going. And it did. And in some ways, I think that's really the power and the, looking back, at least the beauty of grief, you know, is that it really, it's such a powerful, painful, transformative experience that, you know, I also, as Rose said, you know, I mean, I value life so much more than I did before. You know, I'm also much more aware of the fragility of life than I was before, because I thought everything was immortal. And, you know, as much as I mean, I've got a wonderful life now and a son who's now 25 and a wife whom I love, and, you know, we're financially secure. And at the same time, I'm aware that it could all go away in a moment. You know, and that's just not an awareness that I used to carry. And so it makes the world more precious for me. It's not that I'm fearful. It's just that I recognize how precious it all is. So I have, there's a lot of gratitude in that too.
And poetry was that vehicle or that steering wheel or whatever on that ship that seemed to push you forward a little bit in your grief journey, which is really beautiful. Mike, yeah. Where do people, I guess Amazon is where they can get a hold of your book.
Yeah, you can get it. So I have a website, MikeBernhardt.net. So it's MikeBernhardt.net. And if you go there, there's a big button that says order and or buy or something. And it takes you to a page where you've got multiple ways to buy it. I don't sell it directly. It's just too much of a pain. So, but Amazon or your local bookstore can order it if you prefer. So that's it's easily available.
And did you want to, I can put this in the show notes. Did you want us to put a link to also to the John Fox Foundation, or is that?
You could do that if people are interested in that organization, sure. Because I do want to support him as well. He wrote a beautiful foreword for this book. Because he had an experience with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross that was pretty transformative for him. And so he writes about that in the foreword.
One last quick question.
Uh-huh.
People who are listening on today, who think they're not poets, like me.
Uh-huh.
What would you say to us to encourage us to begin perhaps this, this writing this type of genre? Like,
well, I'll tell you what, if you don't mind, I'll read you I have one page at the back of this book here, okay, encouraging people to experiment with poetry if they'd like, if they found the poetry in this book moving. And so it starts with a quote from John Fox. Poetry is natural medicine. It is like a homeopathic tincture derived from the stuff of life itself, your experience. Poems speak to us when nothing else will. Poetry helps us to feel our lives rather than just be numb. The page touched with our poem becomes a place for painful feelings to be held, explored, and transformed. And that's from his book, Poetic Medicine. I invite you to join the contributors of this book in expressing your own grief for yourself through poem making. The next 10 pages are blank, reserved for your voice, for your own poems or writing. The contributors to this book found validation, insight, and healing in expressing their experience through poetry. I carried the grief of losing my daughter for 20 years until I wrote about it. Gradually in the writing, the healing process began, said one. If you've never written poetry, you may not know where to begin. Here's a suggestion. Pick a poem from this book that moves you and choose a line from that poem. Begin your poem with that line. What do you feel when you read that line and poem? What does it remind you of in your own loss? Are there sounds, smells, images, or memories that arise? Write those down. Your poem could be the remembrance of an everyday experience, something now lost that you once cherished or took for granted. It might mirror the depths of your love or reveal thoughts or feelings that frighten you, even anger at your loved one or a loss of faith in God. It's all okay. Write it down. We can't heal if we're afraid to tend to our wounds. You may think you can't write, that your words aren't good enough, but I assure you they're precious, worth more than anything else in this book, because they speak your truth. Your poem doesn't have to be pretty. Not everyone in this book used beautiful language. Write what's true for you. Nothing else matters.
Beautiful. Thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your story and your work with other poets. And for those who have been listening on today, I hope that you begin write teen poetry. And I'm being challenged myself. Mike, maybe it's something I need to discover. I do a lot of writing, Mike, but you know, I haven't written much poetry in my life. And maybe it's time for me to take some of your suggestions as part of, you know, healing in my life that I need as I go along the journey. So thank you again for being in All About the Story. It's really, really thankful for our time together.
Well, thanks. It's been great talking with you, Rick.
And for those, again, who are listening on today, great to have you with us. Please, please share these podcasts with your family and friends. We have so many on It's All About the Story that might be helpful for somebody who is grieving. Till next time, I'm Rick Berg, and this is All About the Story.
Thanks for joining us today on It's All About the Story, Grief Stories That Connect Us. We hope this podcast was encouraging to you. There are so many different types of loss. Why not take time to listen to some of the other unique stories in this podcast series? Feel free to share them with family, friends, neighbors. If you'd like to receive notifications about the next episode in the series, please subscribe and we'll make sure you don't miss out. We hope that you'll be joining us again on It's All About the Story, Grief Stories That Connect Us, with host Rick Berg. Take good care.